Hello and welcome to Contemplative Episcopalian, a podcast of St. Paul's Episcopal Church. We are a Christian faith community located in downtown Beloit, Wisconsin. I am Father TJ Humphrey, and for this episode, I'm feeling quite snarky today. I don't know why. Sorry, but not sorry. There's more snark for you to prove the point. Sorry about that. And no apologies for maybe things I say later. It is what it is. I'm just putting it out there. So, for this episode, we have a homily for you that I delivered on March 14th, 2021. I don't really know what the title is. I'm just writing it down as clergy, question mark, snakes, question mark, snake clergy, question mark. That'll do. God bless you. A delightful reading from the Book of Numbers. From Mount Hor, the Israelites set out by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom. But the people became impatient on the way. The people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and we detest this miserable food. Miserable bread? They just said they had no food. I'm assuming miserable bread. Okay, here we go. Then the Lord sent poisonous serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many Israelites died. That seems like a really measured reaction on God's part. Anyways, the people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord to take away the serpents from us." So Moses prayed for the people, and the Lord said to Moses, "Make a poisonous serpent and set it on a pole, and everyone who is bitten shall look at it and live." So Moses made a serpent of bronze and put it up on a pole, and whenever a serpent bit someone, that person would look at the serpent of bronze and live. The word of the Lord. Another reading from the Gospel of John. Jesus said, "Just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whoever believes in him may have eternal life." What is going on with this bizarre snake story? I didn't have much of a snake phobia before, but I sure do now. Thanks, God. To recap the story, not that we really want to, I guess, but to recap it, the Israelites find themselves wandering through the desert, and since they have no food, God decides to rain down manna, or bread from heaven, for them to eat, or the bread of angels for them to eat. And yet the people still complain, and they call God's bread miserable, which is about as unwise as telling your uber-traditional grandmother that her freshly baked homemade bread sucks, right as she is lovingly pulling it out of the oven just for you. My friend, you will never live that shame down. So yeah, God's upset and decides that the appropriate course of action to take, the measured response, is to send venomous snakes to bite the people. "Oh, you don't like my bread, little Johnny? Maybe some poisonous snakes will change your mind." Well, surprise, surprise, the people have a sudden change of heart, and they decide that God's crappy angel bread is a better option than snakes. So to fix the situation, God commands Moses to make an image of a snake and put it up on a pole so that anyone who looks at it can be healed from their snake bite. Now, according to many preachers, Moses made, maybe most preachers, I've only ever heard this story preached in this way, according to these preachers, Moses made a snake in order to remind the people of the snakes they had invited upon themselves by not showing gratitude to God. Many preachers have proclaimed that in order to be saved, we have to acknowledge our own despicable wretchedness. And they argue that that's what this story is all about. It's all about turning and facing all of our shameful misdeeds before we can get it right with God, just as people had to turn and face the serpent. Yeah, I don't buy it. And I don't buy it because this way of interpreting the story, it doesn't mesh well at all with the way that Jesus is using it. In our gospel reading, Jesus compares himself to the bronze serpent on the pole. But Jesus' whole point isn't to remind everybody of their sin. He's not a snake reminding the people of the snakes that afflict them. He's not sin reminding people of the sin that afflicts them. Rather, Jesus wants to show that he has not come to condemn the world, but to save it, to make it whole. So clearly there's a deeper layer of this snake incident in the wilderness than what meets the eye. Some light is shed on the story if we look to another book in the New Testament, also written by John, that also talks about snake bites. In the beginning of the book of Revelation, John tells us that he is writing down Jesus' vision of the throne of God, a vision that transformed Jesus into the Son of God, into the great high priest, the Lord. In the vision, Jesus also saw how a great beast had oppressed all kinds of people by forcing them to receive the mark of the beast on their right hands and on their foreheads. Biblical scholars have pointed out, especially Old Testament scholars, that the origin of the word mark here in the mark of the beast can be traced back to the Hebrew idea of a snake bite. The imagery, all of it here, is clearly metaphorical, mystical. But the meaning of the mark of the beast, of the snake bite, it can be found in the placement of where these people were forced to receive these marks, on the right hand and the forehead. This was precisely where the religious teachers of Jesus' time wore their phylacteries. In other words, the oppressive beast, the ones afflicting people with snake bites, according to Jesus' vision, they were a group of religious teachers who had corrupted the Hebrew faith. Josephus, who was an ancient Jewish philosopher, who also lived around the time of Jesus, said that there was a deep division within the heart of Judaism that had gone back quite some time. Those who had returned to Jerusalem from the Babylonian exile centuries earlier, he said, were called Jews for the first time by the people of Israel who hadn't been exiled. The Israelites who were left behind felt the need to distinguish themselves from those who had returned. So those who were left behind, they emphatically referred to themselves as Hebrews because they felt as though they had preserved the essence of their religion, whereas the returned exiles had altered it drastically. And the tension between the two groups continued to build because it was the returned exiles who rebuilt and who ran the temple in Jerusalem. This is precisely why John refers to Jerusalem in the last part of the book of Revelation as Babylon. Those who had returned from Babylon had corrupted the city and many people's minds. And the writer of the Enoch books also claims that the priests at the temple during this time were offering polluted sacrifices, so something was off. In other words, there was something about the way in which these religious leaders and these clergy were promoting their religion that didn't jive well with a whole lot of people. Even though the exile had ended and the temple had been restored, the true Hebrew faith had yet to return to the land. Now, another interesting twist in all of this, this is like way too much Bible, nerdy Bible information for you, I'm sure, but another interesting twist in all of this is that when Isaiah experienced his vision of the throne of God around the time of Jerusalem's fall to Babylon, one of the things that he saw over the throne were seraphim, which in Hebrew literally means flaming serpents. So all of this snake imagery, it's metaphorical. The snakes that were biting the people were the religious teachers in Jerusalem and the clergy in the temple. They were also seen as fallen seraphim, or fallen angels. As the prophet Malachi also said, the priests were meant to be angels of the Lord, but they had caused many in the land to stumble. They had become fallen angels. They had fallen from the ways of the throne. Before the Hebrew faith had been altered by these religious teachers, these clergy, the Hebrew people remembered a time when God could be experienced directly. The high priests would behold God on the throne in the Holy of Holies, and the vision would radically transform them, making them one with Yahweh, making them an angel of the Lord. Whenever these priests were in the temple, they would also eat the bread of the presence, a consecrated bread, a special bread that was set out on a golden table with wine and incense. Does that sound a little bit familiar? And this bread, it imparted holiness. It imparted union with the divine, deeper union with the divine, and it imparted wisdom to all of those who ate of it. This bread was also known as heavenly bread, or the bread of angels. Whenever the high priests would leave the temple, they were known by the people as Emmanuel, God with us. And the high priests, they taught the people not to live by law, but to live in accordance with wisdom, to live out of their experience of God. And it wasn't just the priests who were called to come and behold the glory of the Lord. The ancient people understood themselves to be a royal priesthood. Everyone was encouraged to make a pilgrimage 3 times a year to experience the countenance or the face, the glory of the Lord at the temple. All were called to come and be transformed by the experience of God. All were called to become living temples, living incarnations of God's presence. But the religious leaders in Jerusalem during the time of Jesus denied that God could be experienced in such a way. One of their central convictions actually made it into the Bible, even though it's clearly at odds with several other passages of the Hebrew Scriptures. No person shall see God's face and live. These religious leaders taught that God could not be experienced, only obeyed. And they prioritized law over faith, rule-keeping over union with the divine. According to one Old Testament scholar, they were puritanical and fundamentalistic. Now, this isn't all of the Hebrew people, right? The Hebrew cultures in Egypt and Arabia, they looked much different. This is specific to Jerusalem and the temple. But it was under the influence of these religious teachers in Jerusalem that the Hebrew religion basically devolved into a code of ethics. So back to our snake story. This story was written after the Babylonian exile. And even though the story says it's about Moses and the Israelites right after they had left Egypt, it's clearly a metaphor for the situation in Jerusalem after the people who were exiled to Babylon had returned. Many in the nation had rejected the bread of the presence in the temple, or the manna in the desert, if you will. And they rejected the union with the divine that could be discovered through this bread. And they had chosen instead the legalistic teachings of these false teachers, these fallen angels who had fallen from the graceful ways of God's throne. Mysticism devolved into legalism. And whenever the people realized the venomous bite to these narrow-minded teachings of the religious leaders, they were urged to look at an icon, an angelic ideal, a seraphim on a pole, not to be reminded of their own sin, but to be reminded of how far these teachers had fallen from the ideal. The religious teachers were meant to be like the flaming seraphim, unceasingly gazing upon the glory of God and inviting others to do likewise. But instead, they mostly taught people how to live by a code of conduct, by a purity culture, in order to appease a distant God. Whenever people couldn't live up to the standards, they were heavy burdens, as Jesus called them, these religious leaders kicked them out of the temple. This is why Jesus says that he came not to condemn the world, but to save it. He offered a different way than that of the scribes and the Pharisees and the high priests in Jerusalem of his time. All who looked to Jesus would be healed of the venom of puritanical, legalistic, fundamentalistic religion. They would see him lifted up like the serpent on the pole, and they would be reminded of what the throne of God is actually all about, the kingdom of God is all about. All who looked to Jesus would be transformed, becoming one with him, just as the ancient Hebrew people became one with Yahweh. As St. Paul would go on to say, we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory. And they would eat the bread of the presence, what we call the Eucharist now, around an altar where there were no longer Jews or Gentiles, slaves or free people, males or females, but all were one. Jesus is the great high priest who has opened the Holy of Holies back up to the people. And the only thing he excludes from his presence is exclusion itself. My friends, this weird snake story, it's not about how God and Moses rubbed the people's noses in their own sin. Actually, this story is about the exact opposite. It's actually calling out every clergy person who feels inclined to interpret the story in this way. The story is about how Jesus offers healing to those who have been burned and scarred by legalistic clergy. My friends, trust more in your experience of God than in the rules and regulations that clergy have tried to impose on you. They know nothing of the priesthood, but you do. Trust that.